can that create what looks like a false alarm condition? That's question number one. And question number two, I'm amazed that these guys overdrove your tube. I would like to believe they slowly sneak up on the drive and look at the power output. How in the world, under those conditions, if they were doing it in a logical manner, did they end up overdriving that very valuable tube? Over to you, Eric, K2RIW.
No, they overdrove it because they've got to put a 60 dB pad in there. What they're doing is injecting a QAM signal into the analog portion of the visual part of the tube. Well, actually, these things are internally diplexed, so, but in the visual circuitry. And, there's always with like the fifth or sixth transmitter they were doing, and they weren't thinking too well when they finally got to us. So, this was actually done by Walt Disney Company, believe it or not. It was something called DotGuess. And it was, what was it called? Movie Beam. Right. You'd go to the store, and this is before digital television. You would go and buy a movie beam receiver at your Best Buy for a couple bucks, and, you know, it was pay-per-view, and it was done as an experiment with the PBS, a bunch of PBS stations, Los Angeles station, New York station, a few others, and it eventually failed because, you know, people didn't buy enough of them to make it worthwhile. Disney just, you know, they just threw like $12 million out the window. They didn't seem to care too much, but that's how that happened. And by the way, the tube's water cooled, but the cavity itself, the input and output cavity, is air cooled. So yeah, you can actually have dust create a high voltage day in that manner.
You've got a thyrotron-like tube that can bring 28 kilovolts down to ground in 6 nanoseconds. However, I am guessing it cannot do that repetitively. See, what Wesley wants to do is create a repetitive pulse train, and maybe he wants to do it at 60 kilohertz or 160 kilohertz, but he wants to do it repetitively. Although your tube can do that very nicely once, my guess is you wait 10 minutes before you do it again. So I think that kind of a cyrotron-like circuit would not solve his problem, is my guess. Maybe you've got an alternate. KD2EJ, K2RIW.
Now, if you wanted that to do it, the fastest you could do it, it recovers in 300 milliseconds. So anything faster than that ain't going to happen.
300 milliseconds means he can only do 3 events per second. He'd like to do 30,000 events per second. So some other technology is required.
Well, I have in front of me the list that I have sent you. You just look at this. This I'm sorry interrupting you, but one of them, I'm going to read what it says.
You know, I understand what the big deal is. I mean, if you look at most of your old-fashioned TV sets with picture tubes in them, they use either unijunctions or most of them are unijunctions. They'll use SDRs to fire off at either 31K or 15K, and, you know, you get 27,000 volts out of it.
Yeah, but the 27,000 volts is coming out of the flyback transformer secondary winding. Your real SCRs or whatever working on the primary are running on much, much lower voltages. Isn't that true, Eric?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what does he want in the output? Amps or microamps? You know? I mean, my transmitter, the power supplies at 30,000 volts is, you know, 3 to 6 amps. That's it. But, you know, think about how much power that is.
As I see it, he's got more than one way of doing it. He could run at a much, much lower voltage on the primary of a very carefully designed transformer and get this 10,000-volt swing on the secondary is one approach. But right now, he owns the power supply that is directly producing the 10,000 volts, and he's trying to operate on it. And I'm slowly concluding that that's the hard way to go.
They made it already. I'm sorry interrupting you. It says, 5046ER system high voltage MOSFET switch modules are configured for operation at voltages suitable at halfway operation longitudinal field modulators. This particular model is 7 kilovolts, 3 nanoseconds switching time, and 2 XGS.
KC2QAQ with a comment.
I'm downloading the 5046 right now. Go ahead, Glenn.
Yeah, the highest MOSFET breakdown voltages that I'm aware of right now, and I'm talking about stuff that's on the drawing board, and they're trying to produce it, and trying to get, TMOS and some of this other stuff that's out there right now, and trying to get those structures to work at about 1,200 volts is kind of the end of the line. And that stuff is real hard to find, and that's switching, voltages. You know, a 1,200-volt transistor doesn't run at 1,200 volts. I don't know of anything that switches anywhere even near half of that voltage, Wesley, in technology available today. KC2QIQ.
There are devices that will work at high voltages.
Oh, absolutely. There's tube devices. You can make cascading devices. But here again, at those voltages, nowhere near anywhere those kinds of speeds.
The manual that is for model 5046E, which is being called pulse gating system, which is a very fast pulse gating system. On page 14, you have a diagram practically for the whole page. Continue wave mode locked laser, and all of the poster shows, and you can even make a sinusoidal shape out of the square pulses that are very, very thin. Now, on the last page of that, they simply says that 5046ER system utilizes two parts of a optical head assembly, but it also have the contains 8050 modules. That 8050 module is the MOSFET module that makes it switching. So basically, the device that I have on my table, it is giving me all of the regulation adjustment for that particular module. The only problem is that I couldn't find anywhere 8050 module. I sent you a bunch of links, and I have a in and out delay, and this is a multi-turn potentiometer on it. The pulse width, I have a monitor to monitor the pulse. I have another monitor to monitor for the external pulse if I want to. I have a photodiode input with 12 volts on it if I want to just to use a photodiode for pulsing. And I have a trigger, I have a sensitivity adjustment, and I have on for the leading edge and off for the trailing edge. So they made this for this particular module. And apart from that, there is another manufacturer, completely not different from the others, and this is, I'm looking just trying to find it, link. Yes, I've got it. It's BEHLTKE.com. You have that link I sent you, /PDF/80-20-UF/PDF. It's five fast high voltage transistor switches. And it shows all of the diameters, all of the parameters of that stuff. The most interesting for me is not that link. It is the link that I also you have it, which shows a high voltage switches. I'm looking for that link right now. Which on the front page shows exactly how the switches are working. I'm gonna try to find that link. Which one is one of the few links that I have sent you? I don't know if you're looking at the right email. That's the email that has the green link on it, and then a short text on it, and then it has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 10 links on it. If you look at that diagram in one of these links, I'm trying to find which one is that. Oh, yes. www.appliedenergetic.com. On the front page, you see on the right-hand side a schematic of how that switch is made. And then you have a scope chart from the switch. This one is made for 640 kilovolts with 15, 25, and 20 microseconds nominal pulse duration. So, then we're talking about leading edge and the falling edge of it. And to Andrea.
I think I'm looking at the right email. It's got the green and red section about 7 or 8 things down. Equipment purchased in recent days and questions about Lasermetrics 5046 high speed. And this was issued on...
That's the one. Now you go to the part when it says Lasermetrics 5046E high speed electro-optic pulse gating system. And underneath you read, there is one I have, one problem that I have with. It is working good, but 10,000 volt is steady. That the Mazda 8059, it's supposed to be 8050, that gets input from, that Mazda 8050, not 8059, gets BIOS 800 volts, has on, off, which is leading and trailing edge, and has the muzzle impulse of nanoseconds, right, of trailing edge. The mysterious 8050 muzzle is most impossible to find, even as a schematic. I couldn't understand. So then I gave you a short text underneath from the manual, where they specifically sent at 5.02 at the bottom of it, when direct triggering of 8050 pulse muzzles is used. Note, the delay time between trigger inputs and high voltage output is nominally 40 nanoseconds, as it is slightly dependent upon the high voltage operating level, trigger input level, and repetition rate. There is a propagation delay time of the internal electronic element. Propagation delay for the muzzle has been minimized for the type of the high voltage element used. So, yes, they say that the 40 nanoseconds is the output high voltage. I understand that this is a length of an impulse with the leading and trailing length in nanoseconds. And to XGM.
Okay, KC2QAQ, let me see if I've got it.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that 40 nanoseconds of internal delay, transfer delay within that switching device sounds reasonable. Go ahead, Glenn.
Yeah, what I wanted to explain to Wesley about delay time, if you have an input signal, let's say you have a 0 to 5 volt signal coming into from a signal generator, and you want to create an output pulse, what that's saying is that that device is stupid for 40 nanoseconds. That means that when that rise time of that 0 to 5 volt signal goes from 0 to 5, the device does not react for 40 nanoseconds. So that's the delay time. That's what delay time means. That has nothing to do with rise time or fall time or repetition rate. That just means that because there's probably an optocoupler or some other very, very slow device between the input signal and what's going to happen on the output signal, that there's a delay time. So that just means it's even slower, Wesley. I'm going to pass back to K2RW, KC2QIQ.
Yeah, that sounds very reasonable. There was a double where Eric was saying something. Oh, Eric, I wonder if you want to repeat what you said. KE2EJ, K2RIW. Okay, sounds like Eric is gone for the time being.
If you go dig to the link, that is www.appliedenergetic.com. You have that link. which is the 10 links. AppliedEnergetics.com. Open up that link. You see the schematic that is made on MOSFETs. And on the first page, on the second page, you have 640 kilovolts with 15, 25, and 20 microseconds nominal pulse duration, which, based on our discussion right now, we've come to the conclusion that this even is impossible. Not asking for 640 kilovolts, I'm asking for 10 kilovolts and 2 Hz.
When I opened that particular one, the document itself, it says Applied Energetic High Voltage Arbitrary Waveform Generator. Is that the one?
It's correct. Now, on the right-hand side, you have a schematic how the high voltage part is made from. And on the second page, right on the right-hand side at the bottom, says it's a scope shot, and it says A3 level waveform, 640 kilovolts, 15, 25, 20 microseconds nominal pulse duration. Now, we're not talking about delay time. We're talking about pulse duration in here. So, I mean, based on what you guys talking about, this is even impossible. And Trace Gia.
KC2QIQ with a comment?
Yeah, the schematic diagram on the first page shows a whole lot of cascaded switching devices, and I'm guessing that the command signals to each of those is maybe coupled by fiber optics. Go ahead, Glenn.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely, Vic. You know, off the coupled devices. And what's happening, Wesley, is that what you said before was nanosecond rise and fall time, where now you're talking about 25 microseconds. Microseconds is 10 to the minus 6th. Nanoseconds is minus 9th. So if what Dick was saying before about a 1 microsecond rise time and a 1 microsecond fall time, that's only 1 part in 25. So that's much more realistic than 1 times 10 to the minus 9th than 1 nanosecond rise and fall time, which is just, you know, out of sight. It's an order of magnitude different there, Wesley. See what we're talking about? KC2QIQ.
Let's move on to that. Well, we're talking about 640 kilovolts. The minimum is 15 microseconds. When I go to fastpulse.com, because that link, fastpulse.com/PDF5046, PDF, on the right-hand side, on the first cover page, you see the picture. I assume that the mysterious module 8050 is sitting on the top of Laser Magic 5046ER, which the difference between mine and ER is only the enclosure, which is the rack mounted, and mine is the more squarish. But when you go on that page, on the right hand side, to the bottom, a second paragraph on that page starts with, the 5046ER system high voltage MOSFET switch modules are configured for operation at voltages suitable of halfway operation, whatsoever says 7 kilovolts, by simply adjusting the front panel high voltage control. That's what I have. So this is my device. The driver can operate at quarter wave voltage or less time. Now, I'm looking at that part which says nanoseconds on it. I'm trying to find that part. Yeah, I've got it. 10 picoseconds. Hold on. High average peak power operation with the standard KP devices range 500 to 1,100 nanometers in an damage thresholds. Oh, yes. The pulse width is of less than 10 picoseconds and up to 10 gigawatts per centimeter square with pulse width less than 1 nanosecond. And 2 Hz. The dead part is right under the picture on the right-hand side of that page. Right under the picture, you see a fat print. After that, says high average peak power. That part of the paragraph, at the bottom of that paragraph, says 10 picosecond seconds up to 10 gigawatts per centimeter square, with force width less than 1 nanosecond, visible. So it looks like I have a right device. I don't have this mysterious 8050 and 2XGN.
With that sophistication, is Wesley, is a minimum pulse width specification for energy. If you take a pulse width generator and you're at 100%, you have 100% of all the energy on the output. As you reduce the duty cycle, there's going to be a minimum amount of energy delivered. So what they're doing is they're telling you what your minimum pulse width is, in other words, when you squeak the pulse all the way down to how much energy would be available at the minimum pulse. That's what that specification is. So it's really not rise time, full time. It's an energy specification, basically just telling you what's happening, at how much energy would be available at your minimum pulse width. I'm going to pass it back to K2RIW, K62QIQ.
Wes, the last document you were reading, which one of the blue 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, which one of the 9 blue things on the bottom were you referring to?
Go to the second one, fastpulse.com. Oh, no, that's not the second one. Hold on a moment. Fastpulse, I'm looking about another... yes. 1, 2, 3, 4. The fourth one from the top. fastpulse.com/PDF/5046PDF.
Okay, that's a two-page document. And which page do you want me to look at?
Look at the page number 1. You see the picture on the right-hand side. You see, I believe this is that 8050, the black box that is sitting on it. It has 3 connectors on it. Based on what I was able to read, I have 3 connectors. I have high voltage. I have on and off. I have also BIOS. I don't know what is that BIOS for 800 volts is set. But it's on and off. On is a leading edge, off is trailing edge. Now, when you go beneath that picture, you see the fast print. You bypass the fast print, and then you start with high, average, and peak power operation. And then, right at the end of that part, the damage threshold is in the range of 10 to 20 gigawatts per square centimeter with laser force width of less than 10 picoseconds up to 10 gigawatts per square centimeter with the pulse width less than 1 nanosecond visible. That means that this device that I have on a desk, which is exactly the same device, the only difference is that mine is E and this one is ER, which is ER is the rack mounted, okay, is capable of delivering this kind of pulses, or at least in specifications, 1 nanosecond to 1.2 microseconds of the duration of the pulse, and 2XGN.
KC2QIQ, let me see if I have it again.
Greg, Glenn.
Here again, Wesley. That specification is an output specification, and if you listen to the units that you're using, those are light and laser. So in other words, they're talking about visible. This is the light coming from the laser, and in other words, what they're trying to do is they're controlling a controller to control the amount of visible light. But that is not directly what's happening with the voltage and how it's moving up and down and what kind of rise and fall times you're getting on the voltage. So, you know, it's basically what they're doing to control the laser of the light. So there's really a, they're not telling you exactly what's happening with the voltage, true rise and fall times. I'm going to pass it back to K2RIW, KC2QIQ.
No, Glenn, the same page that Dick is reading right now, on the left-hand side, right at the beginning, you skip 5046ER system, just skip this few sentences, and then you, like right below says, with the rise and fall time as fast as 3 nanoseconds, the 5046ER systems are exceptionally useful for regenerative amplifier switch in and out. The switch in and out, we understand from the same page, that would be under the picture one to the third paragraph under the picture, right? The one is fat, the other one is a few sentences, and the other starting from the 5046 ER system high voltage MOSFET switch modules. And to exit.
I'm going to read that paragraph again. With rise and fall times as fast as 3 nanoseconds, comma, 5046 ER systems are exceptionally useful for regenerative amplifier switch in-dash-out, comma, laser pulse switching, comma,
slicing.
Roger. Laser pulse slicing, comma, mode lock pulse gating, comma, cavity dumping and Q switching. The systems are valuable for both intra-cavity and extra-cavity applications and offer the latest technology in reliable lowest radiated noise, comma, solid state, comma, high voltage switching design.
And then you go to the right hand side below the picture, skip the fat print, skip the second one, and start with the 5046 ER high voltage MOSFET switch. And to HDF.
Yeah, by the way, down below this, I talk about Paco cell. 5046 ER systems, high voltage MOSFET switch modules, are configured for operation at voltages suitable for half wave operation of KD.P longitudinal field modulators in the 1000 nanometer range, approximately 7 kilovolts. By simply adjusting the front panel high voltage control, the driver can operate at the quarter wave voltage, parentheses, or less without less loss of efficiency or increased rise or fall times, comma, operation in the half-wave mode may obviate the useful requirements for a quarter or half-wave plate in the optical train in many regenerative amplifier configurations.
Basically what it does is, in order for you to have a light, you got to slice. So you're doing the slicing by MOSFET based on what Glenn says, and Eric says this is impossible. That's what I understand. Now, I have those dials that will give me that operation that you were just reading about it, that adjustment, and so it's here.
Might be helpful if I read the very next paragraph. Maximum system repetition rate is determined by the Pockels cell capacitance and high voltage setting. For a model Q1059 PAPA, Pockels cell, parentheses 5 picofarad, close parentheses, and nominal 7 kilovolt operating voltage, the repetition rate is limited to about 5 kilohertz. At 4 kilovolt maximum voltage, comma, the repetition rate increases to about 7.5 kilohertz maximum. For an RTP Pockels cell, where C equals 5 picofarad, maximum rep rate is approximately 7.5 kilohertz. A benefit of RTP's lower operating voltages, period.
The thing is that operating not with with this module, but are operating with 8050, which is the MOSFET a switching module that operates in much higher frequency. I simply cannot find it. But they mentioned that. Also, I'm going to refer to the manual of that device. Let me find it. Back to you.
Is there anything on this particular data sheet that indicates greater than 7.5 kilohertz of repetition rate?
This one not, because they refer to different switching modules. They not refer to 8050. I'm trying to find right now 8050. I'm not really concerned about nanoseconds. All I need is just to have a switching muzzle, or make the switching muzzle, and based on the information that I have, you were looking the other article, Belke, if makes switches that are very fast, and that they even gave the schematic on it. So it is doable. Also, if you go to belke.com/PDF80-20 UHF PDF, it's as fast high voltage transistor switches and 2XGF.
Wes, what do you believe is the repetition rate you would like to achieve?
25 kilohertz.
Have any of the data sheets hinted that 25 kilohertz?
I'm sorry, 25 kilohertz, right, but.
Have any of the data sheets indicate that 25 kilohertz rep rate at these voltages is possible?
Yes. Yes, it is. I'm trying to find this particular moment where it says on it. On the data sheet of the belke.com/PDF/8020UF.PDF, you have that link. It says switch, but maximum switching frequency continuously is only 2 kilohertz. Back to you.
So right now, have you found any documentation implying that 25 kilohertz of repetition rate is possible?
I'm getting confused. If I say yes, I have to have that particular information in front of me. I spent like a week digging for it, and I couldn't really find much. Question is, based on the diagram that you've seen on one of the pages, which was with the MOSFETs, if I'm having something that is a few microseconds raising time, that would be good. The only why I'm looking for something that is so fast is because I have a device. Maybe Glenn would be able to help me out to tell me, if I have a leading edge and trailing edge separate in the BNC connectors, if I have a 10,000 volt regulated the DC voltage, and the company LaserMetric was able to make the device, how would he be able to design such a switch?
Now let me modify that a little bit before Glenn answers, and that is, because you've got a separate coaxial cable with a BNC connector that creates the rise time and a second one that creates the fall time, it implies that there is a switching network that is what I call a pull-up, and there's another switching network that I call pull-down. Looks like to me there's two entirely separate switching networks, and you got to make double sure you don't have one fighting the other one. Maybe that's what they've done here, as opposed to one single pull-up switching network into a dummy load resistor.
The thing is that they have two potentiometers, which is in/out delay, and the second one is pulse width. There are probably 10 turns potentiometers. And those potentiometers right off the front of the device allows me to regulate the leading edge and the falling edge. And to exit.
I'm being led to believe that this circuitry was intended to swing 10,000 volts on or off some kind of a device. Maybe it's the Pockel cell that has some amount of capacitance. So because of the capacitance, you need a pull-up high-voltage network that does the switching, and another switching network that does the pull-down to discharge the capacitor. That's my guess as to the intent of this circuitry. Wonder if you see it that way, Glenn. KC2QIQ, K2LIW.
Yes, in unipolar switching with high voltages like this, typically the load is the pull-down, and the rise time is the tough one. And in the case of lasers and optical devices, there's a cutoff range. So in other words, the voltage doesn't have to swing to get optical, transmission to move. In other words, you don't to get the light to conduct and then the light to stop conducting. It doesn't have to go, full DVDT of 10 kV. It can go something quite a bit less than that. And the other thing, the other key to the way the specifications were being read out is that, they're talking about minimum energy requirements and delay time. So in other words, let's say if I have a 40 nanosecond delay time and I want to put out a 10 nanosecond pulse, basically what that's saying is that I have to put out a minimum of 140 nanoseconds. Actually, it's 180, right? Because in other words, it's going to be blanked for, in other words, 40 nanoseconds on either side. Just basically because of how slow the reaction time is. Let me let it drop for a second.
Yeah, let me add something here. Possibly 10 kilovolts is the on state and 7 kilovolts is the off state. So the pull-up circuit pulls you up to 10 kV. The pull-down circuit only has you pull you down to 7 kV in my example. Is that possibly what's going on? Over to you, Glenn.
Yeah, being that we're talking about lasers here, I would say that that's probably in the ballpark of what's going on. And if you need something a little faster than that, what you do is you can run the laser probably at a little bit less amplitude, but bring it down to half that voltage. And by bringing it down to half that voltage, you can go from maybe 4 kV to 3 kV. And now you can really move along quite a bit faster. We're still talking kilohertz here. And we're not rocking and rolling anywhere near nanoseconds, or if you know what I'm talking about. So, but can I make voltages rise and fall that fast? Unipolar, not that easy. Bipolar, yes. In other words, if I were to drive a transformer and put the switching device on the primary side, can I go through, two quadrants pretty quickly? Yeah, I'd say I can, and I probably could do it in, probably somewhere in the order of, a couple of microseconds up and down, full swing. And I think that's really rocking and rolling, if you know what I'm saying. You can get, plus or minus, or let's say plus or minus 5 kV for a 10 kV peak-to-peak swing in, in a couple of microseconds. That's really, really moving, Dick. K2RIW, KC2QIQ.
B2QQR.
QQR recognized. Get you in a second. Glenn, when you said the word bipolar, I think you mean bipolar transistor. When you said unipolar, do you mean field effect transistor? And if those are both correct, what is the highest voltage you know of that a FET can tolerate? What's the highest voltage you know of that a single bipolar can tolerate? Over to you, Glenn, first.
No, my definition of unipolar being that, in other words, if I have an output that's going 0 to 10 kV, that's unipolar, one quadrant. Bipolar meaning two quadrants. In other words, I'm going 0 to 5 kV, back down through 0 to minus 5 kV. So, in other words, I'm going unipolar of 0. So that's what I'm talking about. Basically, that's a transformer coupling, so I'm switching something on the other side. The problem with MOSFETs, or most of the silicon devices are, you have a DVT limitation on the silicon. If you look at the the drain to source barriers that are inside there, whether you're using a trench or the structure of the MOSFET itself, there's a limitation to the amount of voltage swing without cracking the die. And there are energy ratings for how fast you can move up and down a voltage on a MOSFET. And they're nowhere near the nanoseconds, if you know what I'm saying. In other words, if you need to move things in nanoseconds, the voltages we're talking about are 0 to 5 volts, 0 to 10 volts. You need to move things in hundreds of nanoseconds. Now we're talking, a couple hundred volts. We want to move things from 0 to kilovolts. Now we're talking microseconds. K2RIW, KC2QIQ.
I think it was WB2QQR. Go right ahead.
Okay, thank you very much. Just take a minute of your time. I just wanted to know whether you fellows hear me all right. I'm using an indoor mobile antenna.
Yeah, Irving, I think it is. You're coming through the machine with dead full quieting. Sounds like you were born in Brooklyn. And I didn't get a chance to listen to you on the input, but you're coming through the machine very well. So the fact that the antenna is internal and I think you're in Roslyn. It looks like you're doing very well. Roslyn, I think, is pretty high territory. Back to you, Irving.
Hi. I was born in Brooklyn. Okay. Thank you very much. WB2, keeps you all clear.
Dick, a question. If you look at it, AppliedEnergetics.com, and when you see that schematic, that is actually they refer to the arbitrary waveform generator at very, very high voltages, I mean 600 kilovolts. But what they say is such generators are usually limited to maximum of 10 volts. So that's exactly what this is. Cube Ampere has produced arbitrary waveform up to 10 kilovolts with severe limitations. And they say that they are creating arbitrary waveform generators to 720 kilovolts. And the diagram on the right shows three stages unit that have been built up to the 220 stages. In other words, what they say is you just take one stage, you multiply the stages till you reach the desired voltage. What amazed me in here is that on the page number 2, underneath of the black screen shot, you see 640 kilovolts with 15, 25, and 20 microseconds nominal pulse duration. So let's say 15 nanoseconds. What frequency would that be, Andrew Xian?
And let me backtrack a little bit here. This Applied Electronics High Voltage Arbitrary Waveform Generator, what it has is three cascaded stages shown, but I presume they can cascade any number of stages, but each individual stage has a pull-up transistor with a set of commands to it and a pull-down transistor with a set of commands to it. Let's see what it says. I think I'm seeing pull-up gate and pull-down gate, or just seeing PO gate. I can't quite read it.
So that's what I have. I have up and down.
Yeah, the cascaded schematic diagram, it's a little bit low in resolution. The commanding signal for Q1A looks like it says FO gate. And the commanding signal for Q1B also says FO gate. There must be two separate gates. I'm wondering if one of those is the pull-up command, one's the pull-down command. What do you think, Wes?
I believe you're right.
And either it's too low in resolution to read it, or they made a little bit of a mistake there. So it looks like they can cascade those things up to 720 kilovolts, which is way beyond what you need. However, I think you're seeing indications of switching speeds or repetition rates, one or the other, that's in the microseconds. And I guess you're worried 20 kilohertz. If you were operating at 20 kilohertz, that would be 50 microseconds of rep rate.
I have 15, 20, 25 microseconds at 640 kilovolts. My understanding is that I operate with that particular design with 10 kilovolts, then I'm reaching much lower time of duration. Look at the second page at the scope shot on the right-hand side, and right underneath it, a three-level waveform, 640 kilovolts, 15, 25, and 20 microseconds nominal pulse duration. If it's a nominal pulse duration, that means repetition is there, and to achieve.
Yeah, because that's a three-level pulse, is the 15, 25, and 20 telling you the microseconds of each individual step, or is it telling you microseconds of the whole pulse? What do you think?
Microseconds of whole individual pulse. That's 15, let's say, take the minimum. 15 microseconds nominal pulse duration. Second page, the scope shot underneath of the right-hand side lower scope shot. Exactly what Glenn said. the lower the voltage, the higher the repetition rate. They refer to 640 kilovolts, so now we're talking that 320 kilovolts should be 7.5 microseconds, and so on and so on. So that would suit my purpose and to exist.
In the case of this arbitrary waveform generation, Glenn, what I'm seeing here in this second page of the document, fourth diagram, lower right-hand corner, they made two steps on the way up, you could say, and two steps on the way down, but the upward-going intermediate step and the downward-going intermediate step are at different levels. In other words, it looks to me like you have the ability to turn on either a pull-up or a pull-down circuit for a given length of time such that the slew rate is somewhat constant, but depending on how long you turn on the pull-up or pull-up circuit, you decide where the step settles. I could start off at zero, go to 300 kilovolts on the first step, 500 kilovolts on the second step, 640 kilovolts on the third step on the way up, then on the way down, do something entirely different. One step, 450 kilovolts on the first down step, and then the next down step all the way down the ground. So the steps up and the steps down don't have to correlate because of the way they're using the pull-up and pull-down circuitry. I think that's what they're saying on this very high voltage cascaded arbitrary waveform generation process. That's my guess as to what's going on. I wonder if you've heard of anything like that, Glenn. KC2QIQ, K2RIW.
Yeah, it's very unusual and very specialized circuitry used for that. I'm sure it costs mega or giga dollars for those pieces, and they're probably more rare than finding peace in the Mideast to try to locate. But yeah, it's all possible. I mean, you know, that's what the fiber optic and the opto-isolation circuits are all about. I mean, these things, you know, they basically have matched pairs of you know, fiber optics with opto-isolators that basically are the gate drives on these things, and they're cascaded. But there again, you still have the trench issue, you know, how fast the real rise times are. But, you know, and there again, you know, you do have rise times, and then there's a settling time at the top. So in other words, you can move, you know, charge across the device from, let's say, the 10% to 90 kind of quick, but you still have that settling rolling towards the top. So how round and how square are these waveforms looking, Dick, from what you can see at the high voltage? That's really where the rubber meets the road, if you know what I'm saying. K2RIW, KC2QIQ.
That's a short comment. I have a different approach. Laser metric 5046E, I believe, is somewhere about $10,000. And it does have a diode, output for the diode, so I can pulse it with diode if I want to. But I bought it for $100. So you can find anything that you want, as long as you dig for it, and to exist.
Sounds like you're going to be doing a lot of digging there, Wesley.
Let me hit you with something, Glenn. Let's assume that I'm charging a capacitor. In other words, the real load has got some amount of capacitance, and you're trying to put some high voltage on it, so you're charging that capacitor. Let's assume I'm charging a 1 nanofarad capacitor. No, let's make it a 1 picofarad. 1 picofarad capacitor, but I'm going to charge it to 10 kilovolts. The amount of joules of energy that's going to be in that capacitor when it's at 10 kilovolts is 1/2 CV squared. Because I'm charging it with a series pass transistor, I believe the number of joules of energy that I get into the capacitor and the number of joules of energy that I dissipate in the series pass transistor that does it, I think it's the same number of joules. So therefore, you can calculate how many joules are going into the capacitor, how many joules have been lost by the capacitor, and it's lost by dissipation into that transistor. So even if your transistor has the right voltage standoff characteristic and the right current characteristic to give you the slope of rise and fall that you desire, you now got to worry about what instantaneous dissipation it can tolerate, depending on how many joules you're dumping into and out of the load capacitor. See if you agree with some of that, Glenn. KC2QIQ, K2RIW.
Yeah, that's right on, Dick. As a matter of fact, unfortunately, the only thing that I can add to that, and remember what I was talking about cracking the trench, what I meant by cracking the trench is exactly that, that's heating when you're pulling that energy out. And unfortunately, the COSS, or the charge stored in the trench of the transistor, is going to be far greater than that picofarad that you're trying to charge. It's usually in order, probably 10 to 1 worse. So, in other words, inside that transistor, just moving that voltage up and down, there's a lot of energy just internally within the transistor to get the energy that's being transferred to the load. So, yeah, there's a tremendous amount of dissipation in that transistor that even the load, in terms of energy, is not necessarily sharing. So, yeah, there's a lot of power there, Dick. K2RIW, KC2QIQ.
Dick, read on that page, Applied Energetic. We have the role of novel means of charging each stage capacitor, C1. That's on the bottom of the first page.
Yeah, the bottom of the first page. I see the C1, C2, and C3. That's the three separate stages.
No. The text says concept on the first page, concept, and then at the bottom of the front page, from starting from the word, we have developed the novel means of charging each stage capacitor.
C1 through CN using air core magnetic flux. What in the world is that? But let me hit you with one other thing, Glenn, that maybe helps. Whenever you and I have seen the equivalent schematic diagram of the thermal characteristics of the junction of a power transistor, the thermal characteristics, specific heat in those diagrams is usually represented by a capacitor. We're not talking about electronic capacitor. We're talking about an equivalent capacitor in the equivalent thermal diagram of a transistor. So you've got a great big capacitor which represents the steady state dissipation. You've got a number of other capacitors, which means that even if your transistor can dissipate 100 watts continuously into its heatsink, for very brief periods of time, like a microsecond, the junction might be able to take 180 watts as long as the duration of that particular dissipation is less than a microsecond. There's another series of capacitors, and doesn't that help us somewhat here? In other words, you've got some thermal mass, or you've got some specific heat characteristics of the junction. The junction can't heat instantaneously because there's some real mass there if you're talking about microsecond events. KC2QIQ, K2RIW.
Yeah, it sounds good, but unfortunately, there's other problems. The other problems are, if you look at the really, really fast silicon, the really fast MOSFET switches, like to do real telecommunications, real high-speed stuff, you have to really shrink the trench. In other words, you're going to try to get things down into nanometers. In other words, you really want to get those trenches small to get them to move. Problem is, when you start going up into the higher voltages, the die size starts growing exponentially. In other words, they become bigger and bigger and bigger. So what's happening is you have a voltage share problem and charge storage across, or COSS, which is the bulk, the whole thing. But then when you break down that COSS across the die, and you start looking at where the voltage is building up across the die, you have to be careful because you get micro arcs. In other words, there's going to be a point of DDDT within the MOSFET. So in other words, you need the required spacing inside the trench to make sure that you don't have arc over. So you have a spacing problem, the size of the die. There's a lot of things going on there. It gets kind of complex when you have to move very, very high voltages quickly. K2RIW, KC2QIQ.
Okay, it's beginning to sound like the particular MOSFET or bipolar or whatever transistor that's doing the switching has to really be designed for your amount of capacitance that you're charging, your amount of voltage that you're slewing, and your amount of slew rate in volts per microsecond that you desire. So in other words, because of internal arcing and crazy dissipation effects across the die of the transistor itself. It has to be somewhat carefully selected for that particular environment of voltage, capacitance, slew rate, and rep rate. KC2QIQ, K2RIW.
Absolutely, Dick. And there are ways of tricking around this. One of the earlier things that was done before MOSFETs really were on the scene is that, let's say if I had a really fast MOSFET that was good to maybe, let's say, like 50 volts, but I had a 1200-volt transistor, what I could do is I could tie the emitter of a cast-coated transistor, let's say a 1200-volt transistor, and basically tie the base to a voltage limitation of, let's say, like, say 25 volts. So let's say I took a firm power supply voltage or a bias and biased the base to 25 volts. I could take the emitter and switch the emitter with a cast-coated MOSFET and swing, you know, from, let's say, 25 volts to zero, and I could get very, very fast recovery time without the delay in storage time of a bipolar transistor. So this way I get the high voltage capability and the very, very fast switching of the of a power MOSFET, basically doing emitter switching from, let's say, 25 volts to zero. And you can see how you... So there's a lot of techniques used for doing high voltage switching. That's just being one example. And there again with the MOSFETs and using the ISO drives, you can achieve even greater things. K2RIW, KC2QIQ.
At first, the circuit that you just described sounds like you're swinging the gate of, say, for instance, a high-voltage MOSFET, which has a significant amount of gate capacitance, but you're swinging it with a bipolar to ground, like a crowbar circuit.
The opposite.
So you're charging it very rapidly. So it's a pull-up like crowbar circuit, but the bipolar is moving the charge on the gate. So in order to have high voltage capability, it's got to be a great big die. The great big die means you got a lot of base capacitance. A lot of base capacitance means moving the base fast is slow, is difficult, unless you're using either a pull-up or a pull-down bipolar transistor. Is that somewhat like what you're describing?
I think it's the other way around, Dick. In other words, a MOSFET, if you have a gate, let's say a 25-volt MOSFET, and you can actually have a current source that can drive that gate high and low. In other words, you can have, let's say, 10 nanofarads of capacitance on the gate of a low-voltage power MOSFET, but you can drive it with very, very high current source, you know, for 0 to 10 volts on the gate of a power MOSFET very easily, and, basically drive that thing really, really hard. Now, the drain to source going from 25 volts to 0 on this little power MOSFET can move very, very rapidly. But you see, the problem with the bipolar transistor is when it goes into saturation as a switch, it has a storage time. So in other words, if you were to try to modulate the base of a bipolar transistor from saturation in and out, there's a storage time where the primary carriers of the bipolar transistor it could take, you know, a microsecond before you can pull the energy back out to get that bipolar to swing back down again. It's that difficult to move. Where if you were to take a high voltage bipolar transistor that's good for 1200 volts, very easy to find, and you bias the base to something like 25 volts, but then do the emitter switching from the emitter of the bipolar transistor to ground with a low voltage power MOSFET, you can get a cascode operation of very, very fast moving DBDTs without having the trench problem within the MOSFET.
The answer, guys, is with the charging capacitor is when you start to read CN through C1 using magnetic flux air core. They're talking about later on over there with the two coils. One is the inner one, one is the second outer one. And the magnetic field that induces the voltage in the secondary coil, and the secondary coil drives voltage multipliers to charge each stage and generate the gate driver power. Back to you.
Let me backtrack for one step, Glenn, on what you last said. One of the definitions of saturation of a bipolar transistor is that both junctions are forward biased. And whenever you saturate a bipolar, getting it back out of saturation takes a whole lot of time. So if you've got real smart circuitry, you may use it in a pull-up or a pull-down network, but you do something external to the transistor to make sure it isn't able to get into the small amount of